Hey, listeners. I'm Karen Riley Jeffers, NCSM's Eastern 2 Director. Welcome to our series, Learning with Leaders, Everyone Belongs in Mathematics. Thank you for joining me and my co-host, Abel Maestas, the host of Teaching That Counts, as we talk with both leaders and influencers about their math journeys and contributions. Today, we will hear from our special guests about their inspiration, perceptions, and insights regarding instructional decisions that make the mathematics space welcoming and engaging to all. Listen and learn about how beliefs, practices, and policies must continue to advance to ensure that each and every person feels a sense of belonging in mathematics.
All right, welcome everybody to this month's NCSM Learning with Leaders podcast and our series, Everyone Belongs in Mathematics. I am one of two co-hosts, Abel Maestas, and our other co-host is
Karen Riley Jeffers.
There she is, Karen Riley Jeffers. And we are so excited this month to welcome a wonderful guest and friend, Martha Garcia, to this month's podcast. I don't know why I struggled so much, Martha, on that. It's like, it's like a name that I grew up with.
That's right.
Martha is an elementary math specialist and coach with over 30 years of experience in teaching, coaching, and facilitating professional learning. She currently works as a math coach with a variety of school districts across the U.S. and teaches graduate courses focusing on mathematics leadership. She's part of an equity team, which we'll talk, I hope we get a chance to talk about this more today, that's working on developing tools to support teachers at Turk's Forum for Equity in Elementary Mathematics. Marta and her colleague, Polly, facilitate an online professional network for math coaches and teacher leaders. This network offers math coaches a monthly gathering where coaches are able to learn and share together. Marta has received the Presidential Award for Excellence in Math and Science, the NCCTM Rankin Award for Distinguished Service in the Area of Mathematics Teaching and Learning. She's a contributing teacher, researcher, and author in several National Science Foundation projects, as well as mathematics. Marta focuses much of her work on the development of equitable classrooms that invite the contributions of multilingual learners. She's interested in supporting all learners to reimagine math as vibrant, inclusive, and accessible. Thank you so much for joining us this month on our podcast, Marta.
Oh, wow. Well, I am so glad to be here. I just have had an opportunity to learn and work with Abel and Karen in a variety of ways. And I was so touched to be able to be here with you all today.
It is so great to have you. You are special, Marta. This is from the first time that I joined like the Coaching Connection PL network in the evening time to the work that you came and did with our district. It's just been amazing to work with you. So thank you again for being with us. Before we begin, even though Abel just introduced you, could you share some of your journey in education that has led you to your current work?
Sure. You know, I'll start off by saying that my story with math was not a love story, especially not at the beginning. And so sometimes when I think about the work that I do now, I still become awed and amazed that I'm working in the field of mathematics. But I am the daughter of my mother was an immigrant from Cuba. She came in the early 1950s. And my father was a Latino who was raised in Tampa, three generations in South Florida. And so my mother didn't speak English. I entered school not speaking any English and found myself, you know, trying to navigate. I loved school. I loved books. I loved everything, but I didn't have the language to communicate in the way the teacher wanted me to. So those were my first experiences. And, you know, Abel and Karen, I don't even have any memories of math in elementary, middle, high school. I can't even remember high school classes. I remember one college class where we made math games, and that was about it. And I have to say that I should apologize to the students that I had early on, because I loved literature and poetry and science and social studies. I felt like we had conversations and creativity, and I waited till the very last few minutes of the school day to teach math. And yeah, my first few years of teaching were with migrant middle school students who were in insecure homes. And then I taught in Florida when the Mariel boat lift from Cuba was going on. And so I had students from lots of different countries and really found that belonging, feeling like you belonged in a community of learners together was the first thing, that we took time to do things that weren't academic, but that built that relationship. And then something really pivotal happened in my journey. Two things. I was cleaning out the closet in my fourth grade classroom pod, and I found an old, the first edition of Turk Investigations, a fraction unit. And I opened it up, and there were representations, and there was dialogue with the teacher and the students. And I thought, wait a minute, this is math? And I went and asked the math supervisor, can I try this out? And it completely changed me. And the way I thought about fractions first, and then the way I thought about math. And the second pivotal part of my journey was when I went to Mount Holyoke, which was then Summer Math for Teachers. My the math supervisor, Randy Harder, who saw me as a curious person about math, said, would you like to go to Mount Holyoke for the summer and then come back and do some classes with teachers? And I thought, well, I'll try it. And I went there, and the first afternoon, I was so confused. And I stayed after and said, I think it was Virginia Bastable and Susan Jo Russell, or maybe Deborah Shifter, one of them. They're the three authors of the Developing Mathematical Ideas books. And I stayed after, they were cleaning up, and I said, I don't think I can come back tomorrow. I'm so confused. I have a lot of questions. And they looked at me and they said, that's great. What questions do you have? And it completely changed how I felt about mathematics. And that's the feeling that I've held on to all these years as I've continued my work. So it turned into a love story with math.
That's great. In the entire arc, it's like a rom-com, right?
It could be.
Yeah. You're not liking it, then yes, then something happened. It's just the whole story, right?
Yeah, it could be.
You spoke a little bit about belonging, how you had to feel that sense of belonging too, because like many other elementary teachers, especially ones that I've worked with, they have us, I wouldn't say a fear of mathematics, but that feeling that their self-efficacy of mathematics is not positive. So they wait until the very last minutes, or they don't teach math at all to their elementary kids. And so, as you know, our season here is titled Everyone Belongs in Mathematics. So our leading question to all of our guests is just, what does it mean to belong in mathematics?
Yeah, I've been so thrilled to listen to all the wonderful speakers you've had answer that question. And, you know, we're hardwired as humans to belong, and in all areas of our life. And when you feel like you belong somewhere, your ideas are valued, your questions are valued, your mistakes are valued. You are valued for who you are and the way you communicate in whichever way that is. And in order to feel like you belong in mathematics, like you belong in a classroom in which we're studying mathematics, all of those things have to be true. And I think one of the hardest parts to sort of the barrier for a lot, and you mentioned this, Abel, is that for many of us, our definition of mathematics is a place where we don't even really want to belong, right? It's fast, it's correct, there's one authority. And really, that's not a place where I want to hang out. So in order to feel like I belong, I want to foster an environment where voices are heard, discussions and disagreements happen. And that's what I believe defines belonging. But that belonging begins with redefining what it means to do mathematics. And I think that's an important piece of the kind of work that I'm interested in and have been doing with teachers and students and coaches.
Yeah, absolutely.
That last thought that you said, belonging begins with redefining what it means to do mathematics, is what's really resonating with me right now, reminding me of one of our past sessions where we talked about, is it really truly a place, with Dr. Lou Matthews, is mathematics a place where we want to belong? And I feel like you captured that so beautifully in your response. Shifting a little bit from students to teachers, mm-hmm. like, how has your work as a coach and professional learning facilitator, especially through the virtual math PLN, helped to create a space where teachers and other coaches can find a place of belonging?
Yeah. So I was in the classroom for almost 25 years, and I didn't really want to leave, but I ended up leaving the classroom when I was in Buncombe County, and became one of two elementary math coaches with my colleague and friend Meg. And a lot of the coaching that we did was really focused on how students were experiencing mathematics and what we could do to help teachers also experience mathematics in that way. It's really hard to walk into a classroom and envision what discourse sounds like, what it means to engage in a rich task, if you haven't done that yourself. And so that's a really important part of the work as a professional learning facilitator. One of the things that is very prevalent in mathematics is that you may have one math coach working with four or five schools, or a math coach in a district, and they're very isolated and their job descriptions vary so much. So I guess almost 6 years ago, Polly Wagner, who's my dear friend and a colleague at Mount Holyoke, had this wonderful idea to start a virtual math learning network. At that point, we were teaching hybrid courses at Mount Holyoke. We were one of the first to begin doing that. So people could come in from all over the world and take courses. And Polly thought that she would start this virtual math learning network. And somewhere along the way in the first year, she asked me to come and be a collaborator and do a session with her. And then, of course, I got hooked, because working with Polly is amazing to begin with. But the idea that we were having people from Italy, Canada, Spain, some people coming in the middle of the night, because they needed a place where they could talk to other math coaches and where they could learn together. And so we have been so fortunate that we bring in collaborators. We have people who might be trying out like a nascent idea, something they're thinking about that they want to think about in their coaching practice. We bring problems of practice. And you've been there, Karen. And it's really not a place where you come and someone talks to you the whole time. There's a lot of collaboration, right? A lot of unpacking of coaching practices and ideas. So, we've been doing that for quite a while. We're already getting ready to set our dates for next year. We meet about once a month. It's open to anybody. We probably have close to 1,500 people who are part of the network. We don't have that many come to each session, but all our videos and materials are housed on our site for free, so all math coaches can go in there and use that. It's sort of like you're a really good math teacher, and now you can be a math coach. And there's really not opportunity to think about what does it mean to be a leader in this field? How do I lead with passion and equity? And I love Shane Safir's book, The Listening Leader. Like, how do I listen in order to be a really strong leader?
One of the things that helped me, so I was a coach at the time when I joined the network, and I just happened to hear about it. And I believe it was during the time of COVID, mm-hmm. or either it was like during the shutdown or right after the shutdown. And so I was in a space of like kind of being shut in. And it was mostly through virtual that there were spaces mm-hmm. where you can talk to others, reach out to others. And so it did help me personally to have an additional place where I was learning more about coaching because the coaching role was new to me. And then connecting with others that were experiencing some of the same. And I was able to share it with like some of my colleagues and a couple of them joined in and found that I think found it to be purposeful and meaningful. And the fact that there were so many people from all over the country yes. and then from other areas too that were tuning in. And it's an hour and 15 minutes. And this hour and 15 minutes goes by like that. Because the discussions were so rich. But for that hour and 15 minutes, I didn't feel alone in my role.
Yeah.
Even though I worked on a team with 8 people, we were assigned separate schools. And so when you go into those schools as a new coach, sometimes the teachers are resistant. Sometimes they don't want you to be there. You don't really know how to kind of fit yourself in. And so on the day-to-day, there were feelings of loneliness.
Absolutely.
And so having that space to go to was very helpful for me.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that. And you know, we have sometimes brand new coaches or teacher leaders who are thinking about being a math coach. We also have researchers who come, university professors. And one of the things that Polly and I really love is mentoring, supporting someone to do a session who maybe hasn't done one before. Abel, there we go.
I did one this year, and that was my first one that I did with your network. And I'll share that in a little bit, but I'm going to let you keep going.
Yeah, absolutely. We just love it. So at the end, I'll let you know how you can sign up for that if you want. We'd love to have anybody who's listening come join us and so we can learn together. It's all about learning together and sharing and doing the best we can for our teachers and students.
Well, you know, and on that is we're talking about belonging a lot, and we just had the JML. JML researchers on, and one of them was doing something on coaches, right? On getting coaches some professional development. And one thing that I've noticed as a math coach, when I came into coaching, you know, I was 20 years in the classroom, and that change from being in the classroom and doing the things in a classroom that I do all the time to a totally different role took a long time to figure out how to transition. And luckily, I had 2 math coaches that were already in our district, but I know so many other math coaches in smaller districts or even large districts that have one math coach, and to have an outlet to go to and talk about what they're doing, talk about with others scenarios that have occurred. I know that when I was able to present at the at one of the sessions, the scenarios that I had come up with for them to discuss were literally like they were things that happened to me the last week.
Yeah.
I had just written, and I was talking to another coach. I'm like, hey, check these scenarios out. And they were like, oh, I know who that one is. I know about that one. Like, so it's such a great chance for us when we're getting out of our, you know, our role that we've been in for so long, and we're putting in another place where we're isolated. And we don't have a team to work with that is working on, you know, mathematics itself, mathematics coaching, to have a sense of belonging. Because I tell you that transitioning into that role, we often feel like we don't belong. Like, what am I doing here? Is this where I really want to be? And I know so many coaches, they last maybe 1 to 2 years because they don't have anybody to build with and to work with. And I really appreciate the work that you're doing with this network.
Well, thank you. It's really, Polly and I said it's the best professional learning we can do for ourselves. So there's a little bit of selfishness in there, but we learn so much from our collaborators and the coaches who come. And we really need that support that you described so eloquently, Abel. Yeah.
Yeah. So you've got a lot of things that you've done and are doing. So I know currently your work is in Mount Holyoke Masters in Math Leadership Program, which we got to be part of one of your sessions in the course recently. Karen and I were special guests, which was awesome and lovely. So thank you for having us there. Can you tell us a little bit more about the work that you're doing with those individuals and how leaders can really be instrumental in creating equity in their mathematics programs and systems that they work in?
Sure. I mentioned earlier that this program began as Summer Math for Teachers, which was based on giving teachers an opportunity to come in and do math, which is a really critical piece of any kind of professional learning around mathematics. And we would use the Developing Mathematical Ideas book case. So those are comprised of a case book of cases written by teachers, videos of students, and then lots of math that you do together. And at the end of each of the casebooks is a really nice chapter 8 that's full of really great research. That's the kind of research you can read and dig your teeth into, whatever the expression is. Once I look at it, but whatever it is. It turned then into a master's program. And I mentioned earlier that we began to use a hybrid model so that some students could be online, some could be on campus, some courses were totally online. And in this, it's a master's in mathematics with a focus on leadership and equity. And we've worked really hard as a staff to build an equity thread that runs through the program so that our students begin first in their first courses, thinking about their own identities, their own mathematical identities, and their own mathematical stories. And then that builds into thinking about themselves as really strong advocates for having opportunities for students to build positive math identities. And, we think about Rochelle Gutierrez's work, who she has a really nice video on AMTE where she talks about teachers are identity workers. There's no way we can get around that. And so they do that. Each of their courses has this equity thread that runs through. We use the Impact of Identity book. We use Principles to Actions. And then they have several courses. Lots of the courses are focusing on building content understanding and pedagogical strategies that support equitable classrooms. And the course that you came to visit is the Teaching Mathematics and Advocacy in the Teaching and Learning of Mathematics. And this is the course in which they do a capstone. And so right now the students are doing an amazing job. They really focus on the equity-based standards. They use Pam Seda's ICU care framework. And they identify a need that they need to advocate for. So some students are really reaching out to the community, starting family events or newsletters that go out. I have a high school teacher who's one of the students who's been doing newsletters that go home to parents about what their high schoolers are doing, and has features different mathematicians, videos for the parents to watch. Just incredible work. Some are working on math vision statements. We found that lots of schools don't even have a math vision statement or a math plan. And they're advocating, several are advocating for a focus on early numeracy and thinking about how to belong in a mathematics classroom where counting is more than, one, two, three. So there's lots of ways in which these students are they've developed a project which is based on a need, and then they're working on action steps to advocate for that need. Yeah, really, really proud of the work. And this cohort that you got to meet is cohort 12. So this is our 12th cohort, and I've had opportunity to work with them since the first cohort began 12 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Creating change makers.
And I learned so much from them. I'm like, oh, wow, I need that. I could use that. So again, you know, all of the work I feel that I do is just keeps me joyful and learning. And I think that's an important part of being a leader, right? Is having that opportunity to not feel like you've become complacent with where you are.
Well, we've talked about the PLN. We've talked about Mount Holyoke. Mm-hmm. And a lot of your work and lived experience has been around educating for multilingual students. But what can teachers and coaches do to make more equitable spaces for our multilingual students?
This is such an important question. Thank you for asking, Karen. It's really, when we think about our students who maybe in a classroom where there's a dominant language that they don't yet understand. They don't even have the social language yet to advocate for their own human needs. And we're really pressing on them to learn academic language. And thinking about how can you feel you belong somewhere if your own primary language is not valued or seen? So one of the things I've really been working with as I've gone to schools is asking teachers, you know, sometimes there's the perception that if a child doesn't have the language, they can't come up and share ideas. But there's so many nonverbal ways. And as a matter of fact, when we look at the research, most of our communication is nonverbal as compared to verbal. If you look at a little pie chart, the nonverbal part is a lot larger. So students can come and they can point, they can use gestures, they can have a friend come up and talk as they point. And students can come up and say their ideas in their own language. That is so absolutely important. And if you're processing a new mathematical idea in your own language, then you're much more likely to be able to then later on map a new language on it. And so I've been really interested looking at the idea of translanguaging. And there's some, you know, research around translanguaging. And I loved when I was doing some work with a district in New York, going into a kindergarten class and really documenting how students were going in and out of English and Spanish as they were measuring their feet with cubes to figure out how long their feet were. Huh. And there's a wonderful video of a middle school student. I can't remember now where that is, but where you see a small group of students working and one of the students is pointing and not speaking. But at the end, when it's time to share, he's the one who goes up for the group and speaks in Spanish and tries to say some things in English. So I think it's really important that we don't prohibit students who don't have the language that's being used in the classroom, the academic language, from sharing mathematics. You can have mathematical ideas and not yet be able to express them in the language. And I love the shift from calling students English language learners to multilingual learners, because it goes from a deficit-based description to an asset-based description. The bilingual brain can do lots of things that a not bilingual brain can do. So it's really, really the opportunities when we have more than one language are so critical for the kinds of ways in which we navigate in our world. And just, you know, I go in sometimes into classrooms where I'm visiting, where I'm doing lesson studies or a listening walk or working with a teacher. And I'll have my name tag on and I'll have a little kid come up and sit, look at me and say, I'm a Garcia. Like, you know, it's so great. Or if they hear me speaking Spanish, they start going around the room and say, I habla español, I habla español también. So just, or even if it's a language I don't know, I might say to a student, you know, like just make signal to go ahead, talk, tell me what you want to tell me in your language. And students feel so empowered and released from the constraint of having to speak in a language that they're not yet capable of.
There's some questions I have follow up on that. I just, can I go first, Karen, please?
Of course.
I
get to have paper, scissors.
I know. Here we go. Ready, Rochambeau. I don't think anybody could see. So if we just say it, We'll just say who wins. I've done that in my classes too, especially in a summer school class I've taught, but there are teachers out there that are, they have a sense of fear, I guess, sometimes. Like, they're scared to let the students speak in their own language, because then how do I give feedback? How do I, like, if I don't know any of their language, how do I reconcile that with what they're speaking? So what would you say, I guess, to teachers that are fearful of allowing students to do that, if they don't feel like they don't feel confident they can give feedback on what a student is talking about?
So maybe that's not the time to be giving feedback. Maybe that's just the time to be lifting up a student, right? Positioning that student as capable of sharing ideas. Whether I understand, there might be another student in the class who has the same language, but regardless, that student has had an opportunity to have their voice learned, voice heard, or to stand up and point at particular parts of a representation. In Principles to Action, we have that that effective teaching practice of connecting across representations. And I think that's a critical, if you have multilingual learners in your classroom, that's a critical, practice to pay attention to.
Yeah, not every time is a time that we need to give feedback.
Right.
Sometimes we just need to listen.
Yes.
That's good marriage advice too.
Wondering if you could speak more on two things. One, just for the benefit of our listeners, could you speak more about, like, what exactly is translanguaging?
Mm-hmm.
And also, could you expound upon why EL is deficit and ML is, more embracing?
Yeah, I'll start with that one. So when we say we have an English language learner, we're saying this student doesn't yet have English. And so we're focusing on a deficit, something they don't yet have that they're trying to do. Whereas if we call a student multilingual learner, then it could be that they're learning English and their own, especially if they're younger, they might still be getting vocabulary from their own, their whatever language they speak at home. They might be building that vocabulary simultaneously as learning the English language. And we have students who might come in already speaking two other languages or three other languages. So multilingualism is something to embrace, and it's something to value, and it appears in the equity-based standards as one of the I think it might be under challenging marginality. I'm not sure, but I think that this idea of looking at multilingualism is an asset. It's something that students are bringing in, rather than something that students don't yet have. And then translanguaging, I'm not an expert on it, but if you want to learn more about it, there's some really nice work. Her name is Dr. Garcia. She says the last names I do. And you can, she's got some excellent videos on translanguaging. But translanguaging means pretty much what it means in a probably too simple a way, is that you go in and out of two languages. Like I was describing the kindergartners before, that you use the language that you best have at your disposal for the particular idea that you want to use. So you're not translating. You're not saying in your head, my partner's shoe is 9. El zapato de mi amigo es el tamaño de 9 cubos. And then you translate it, say, the boy have 9 cubes shoe. You're not trying to do that. You're going in and out. So you're using what you have at your disposal for the language that you have for that particular concept.
Yeah, that's fascinating. We do that a lot in California, Spanglish, right? We call it Spanglish. All right. Well, we're coming to the end of this great conversation. Just loving having Marta here with us. As we round this out, can you give one tip that leaders can do to support a sense of belonging in mathematics that would be connected to your work?
Well, there's a commitment that I have made and that Polly and I have made for when we do professional development work with professional learning. I like to say professional learning work with teachers and coaches, and that it's part of every one of our PLNs is do math together. And it doesn't have to be the math that you're teaching at your grade level. But if teachers and coaches and parents, community, if we don't get a chance to do mathematics together, then we can't shift our beliefs about what it means to do mathematics. We can't shift the negative viewpoints that we carry when we think about that. So I really believe that if we're going to have others feel like they belong in mathematics, we've got to get them off the bench and into the game. And we do that by doing mathematics together. Wonderful, you know, counting, a counting sequence, a growing pattern, a same and different, anything that gets people entering into conversation, feeling some joy, having entry points with a variety of solutions. I think that's one of the ways we begin to invite others into feeling like they belong.
I love that so much.
We get off of the bench and into the game.
Yes.
Love it.
Just thinking about our teachers and still getting them, and not just our teachers, but also everyone who supports teachers to see the value in doing the math together. Mm-hmm. And that doing the math isn't anyone trying to make you feel like a student or put you in the place of a student, but it's creating that space of vulnerability where I can say, you know what, I'm not sure how to do this, or someone does it a different way, and it allows you to consider like the misconceptions and anticipate student responses and so forth. There's so much value in doing it. And then for us who just love math, it's just fun.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're so welcome.
Today. Before we leave, how can our listeners learn a little more about you and your work?
Okay. So I'd love for people to visit Turk's Forum for Equity in Elementary Mathematics. That's the current work that I'm doing there with an amazing team. And we have been working on thinking about a framework that can help teachers and coaches and schools think about what it means to have an equitable math classroom. So I'd invite you to go there. So that's Turk's Forum for Equity in Elementary Mathematics. And then you can visit Polly and I at the Math Coach Connection. And I can't remember, goodness gracious, if it's .org or .com. I think it's .org. You'll know, because if you go there and it's not me and Polly, you'll know you're in the right wrong place. But if you go there, you can sign up for our virtual math PLN. We have lots of free resources. Like, we've curated articles and tasks and all kinds of things. And we'd love to hear from any of you. We're always honored to have conversations with people who are thinking about ideas and want to brainstorm and come together for the good of our students.
Well, all right. Thank you so much for joining us today, Marta, and sharing all that you've done and everything with us today. We had such a great time in our conversation.
Oh, I so enjoyed the two of you. Always do. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us today. And we'll hope to have everyone listen to us again next month. Thank you, everybody.
We hope that you have been inspired by this bold mathematics leadership conversation, and will tune in to our podcast series each month. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review. You can learn more about NCSM leadership and mathematics education and our upcoming professional learning events on the NCSM website, mathedleadership.com. You can also follow NCSM on the X at MathEdLeaders and using the hashtag NCSMBold. Until next time.